We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. David Inge alongside with me today. And as we mentioned, a sweet treat is in store for us today. We're going to talk about cake, all kinds of cake, from simple and straightforward to deliciously complex. Our guest is All Things Considered producer Melissa Gray. Every Monday, she brings her colleagues a cake. It makes for a very happy crew there at NPR. Melissa Gray has compiled all the recipes in All Cakes Considered, a year's worth of weekly recipes tested, tasted, and approved by the staff of NPR's All Things Considered. Listeners, we look forward to hearing from you this morning. Join us with a phone call or by email. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Melissa Gray, how are you? Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing out there?
We're doing well. We are doing well. So Robert Siegel wrote the foreword to this book, All Cakes Considered, and one of the very nice things he says about you is that you have many talents, including an ear for radio. So how did you come to your passion for radio?
It's a kind of a strange, one of those quirky little things. I was an art major in college. And when you're working in the studio, you want a radio station that's not going to be too jarring. And I did not like listening to commercials. So I just flipped it over to the public radio station in Richmond, Virginia, and became somewhat addicted to NPR's programming. And then I went to graduate school at the University of Georgia. And while there, I was looking for a waitressing job. I think I'd been in town about 2 weeks. And I didn't know who to ask. I didn't know anyone, really. And so I called the local public radio station where the DJ was hosting classical music overnight and talked to him about possibly finding a good waitressing job. And he said, "You have such a nice voice. You should consider coming in and applying for one of our board op positions." And the rest is history, so to speak.
Wow.
From there, I went from university station to Georgia Public Broadcasting, then to NPR, and I've been doing this now for almost 16 years.
So we owe that person a long
Kevin
time
McKinney.
Ago. Kevin McKinney. Bless him.
Don't remember him. Bless his heart.
Yes, bless his heart. To him, we have, because of him, we have you in public radio.
Yeah. It's been a happy, happy marriage.
Yeah. So what cake did you bring to work this week?
This week, now, true confession, I have not been baking a cake every Monday for the last 5 months because back in June I found out that I was pregnant with my second child. And with morning sickness and exhaustion, it was just a little too much. Then we moved into a brand new house, so I have a new oven to contend with. And last week was the second time I brought a cake in. I brought in my grandmother's sour cream pound cake, which is the first cake in the book. It's also the sort of instructional cake, because as I'm trying to troubleshoot and get to know my new oven, I figured I need to have a recipe that I'm super familiar with and also one that you really can't mess up. So that was the second run of that cake, and it turned out quite well. It turns out my new oven, which is electric, the old oven was gas and a very small oven. The new oven is much more powerful, it is more compact, and it bakes a lot faster. So I'm going to have to do some recipe adjusting, or I'm going to have to get the oven recalibrated.
Wow. So you're facing re-caking.
I'm facing a lot of re-caking until I can get this oven recalibrated, because I think the recipe calls for 90 minutes at 350 degrees. In my old oven, which, as I said, was small, apartment-sized, my 90 minutes was actually more of an hour, 70 hour, almost 2 hours to bake that cake. This oven, the cake was overdone at 70 minutes. And so when I redid it the next week, when I re-caked it, I had to take the temperature down to 330, and it was ready in 75 minutes. And it was beautiful. It got this incredible. I mean, I wish my uncle could have been here because he loves this feature about this particular pound cake. It develops this really neat sort of brown, flaky crust on the top that's like caramelized sugar, and it's crunchy, and it slightly lifts off the crumb, and it's just so sweet. It's his all-time favorite thing about this cake, and he told me one time if he could just have a cake that was all of the crust, he would be completely happy. This cake, when I made it last week, had the most beautiful crust to it, and oh, everybody just went nuts. I love it when that happens. I just adore driving my coworkers into bliss.
Back to Robert Siegel, he refrains.
He says he refrains.
Oh, now Robert, we know.
Robert's actually pretty good. He is a very disciplined person, and he's amazing to work with. He's just the biggest gentleman. He is so knowledgeable and very disciplined in most of his habits. He's very good about not overeating and not having too many sweets. He occasionally will have a slice of cake, very occasionally. But I have found out what his weakness is. It's cookies. Anytime I bring cookies and he can't resist.
Okay. And later,
I have to respect that, though.
Yeah, a little bit later I want to ask you about cookies because there's a chapter in the book called Break from Cake.
And everybody needs a break from cake every now and then.
Yeah, you can't have, yeah.
You got to have more in your repertoire.
Yeah, variety, as they say.
Variety is the spice of life.
That's right. So you mentioned your uncle. Is he a baker? Because I know you come from a family of bakers.
My uncle does not bake, but he is married to a woman who frequently bakes, my Aunt Janet, who I think contributed two recipes to the book. She helped me with the faux fruit cake recipe and inspired another recipe, the rum cake. She loves to bake and cook, so he lucked out with her. But he enjoys baking. He enjoys anything I bake, anything anyone else bakes, and will give you a full criticism of it. He's a former band teacher, so he really knows how to critique. It's great.
Now, you and your brother have now picked up the torch. Mm-hmm. How did that happen exactly?
Well, you know, I come from a very large extended family, as I think a lot of people do in the Midwest. We're East Coasters, but we still have big families, big farming families. And, you know, holidays were all about cousins and aunts and great aunts and, you know, so-and-so's wife who's your third cousin. And these people show up every year, and it's just you're constantly needing a scorecard to figure out how you're related. And you have a big family. We had, I think, 14 kids in one family, so you can imagine how many aunts and cousins and sister-in-laws and brothers-in-laws there were. And people always brought food, and a lot of people brought baked goods, and oh, it was just like this, you know, cornucopia of deliciousness. But as the years went on, we began to lose people. People died. They were old. And the younger generation was not really picking it up. They were not, they would bring stuff, but sometimes it would be from the deli. And my brother just got really fed up with this because he's like, you know, one of the things that was so great about when all we got together was the food and the variety. And people would bring different things. And even though they would typically bring the same thing each year, like you had somebody who was always known for the coconut cake, for instance, and you always looked forward to the coconut cake. Nobody else was doing that. So, he and I both, since we both grew up baking, my mom bakes as well, he was just like, well, we should do it. And the next thing I know, I've got this, you know, angel food cake tube pan, which is just basically a tube pan. And I was charged with doing something with it. He went ahead and did something with his, and I did something with mine. And that's how it all started. He's still baking, too.
Great. Now, when you began, you had a goal to turn out Martha Washington's great cake.
Yeah.
Tell us about that cake.
That's an interesting cake. Now, I went to Mount Vernon. Mount Vernon's pretty close to me, and anyone who's ever in the D.C. area, I know everybody wants to go to the Smithsonian, and you want to go see the White House. Mount Vernon is just, you know, down the parkway in Alexandria, about 10 miles, and it is so much fun. Every year around the holidays, they have something called the Candlelight Tour, where you actually get to go through the house and you get to go to the third floor, which you normally don't go to. And they have reenactors. And they have this woman who portrays Martha Washington, same woman every year. She's great. And you go into this room and it's a dining room. And she talks about the paint colors and how George wanted this particular paint color and why you have grains on the frieze around the top. And the table is laid out as if it's laid out for a holiday spread. And then she talks about the visitors who would come during the holidays to George and Martha's place, and they would entertain. One of the things they had was a cake, a great cake. And this, I get the impression, and I need to do a little bit more research on this, this was just a cake that they would do really for them, because their wedding anniversary was, the 12th day of Christmas, which I think is January 6th. And they would have this cake to celebrate. And it was basically, I don't want to say it was a fruit cake because that scares people. but it's a fruity cake. It's a cake that's made, it's a very dense batter made with seasonal fruits. And seasonal fruits can be whatever you can find that will work in a cake. And it's baked, and then the icing is like this really soft white marshmallow type yellow, not sorry, not yellow, vanilla icing that's baked onto the cake. And they give you a card at the end of this tour that has the recipe on it. And they have the old-fashioned recipe, which has got, like, I think 50 eggs in it. And you can only imagine, you know, all the slaves they had in the kitchen. They were probably just passing the bowls around. It took them hours to get this thing beaten because they were making a big cake and several cakes. But they also converted the recipe for modern bakers, thank God. And I really wanted to make this cake. So I just started working at All Things Considered. I'd previously worked at Morning Edition. I wanted to make a good impression, and I was thinking, what can I do that'll make people, you know, welcome me, that they'll see me and maybe have that Pavlovian response of their mouth watering? Oh, I know, I'll bake a cake. Mm. I'll bake this cake. So I tried this cake, and I brought it in, and they were all very, you know, initially very suspicious, like, why are you bringing us food? Which, you know, I don't work with a lot of Southerners, so I guess they're not used to people bringing food. They are now. But as soon as we started, you know, slicing the cake up, everybody's, you know, opinions changed. They were so excited and thrilled to have the cake, and they're making all these yummy noises. And I'm biting the cake, and I'm thinking, I could have done this better. This is a really kind of dry cake, and maybe if I put a different combination of fruits in, this would make it even spicier. Maybe I should use, you know, a different type of brandy. And that sort of started the whole thing, because it turned into like the scientific method, this experiment of like trying the same recipe and working from it and then coming back, or doing a different recipe and then combining them. And then the whole thing took on a life of its own. Mm.
This is Focus, and our guest this morning is All Things Considered producer Melissa Gray. We're talking with her about cake. She is the author of All Cakes Considered, a year's worth of weekly recipes tested, tasted, and approved by the staff of NPR's All Things Considered. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, we invite you to join us this morning with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. And I want to bring into the conversation now Heather Miller and David Inge. Heather is the manager of member projects at WILL, and among other things, she's responsible for the care and feeding of the Friends of WILL and during fun drives, her co-workers. So in that way, she's our Melissa Gray. Heather puts the soup on, sometimes meatballs, and of course, sweet treats. And in fact, she is baking her way now through All Cakes Considered. And
great.
And she is just thrilled to be here in the studio with us this morning, Melissa.
I applaud you, Heather. That's fabulous.
Well, I'm kind of the Julia, Melissa, Heather relationship going here. You are my Julia child of cake.
Wow.
I pitched All Things Considered last spring for the first time, and we had your cookbook to offer, and I totally fell in love with the cookbook, the stories, and the recipes.
I hope they've worked out for you.
Well, I've baked six so far, and not a crumb remains.
Oh, that's good. That's always a good sign.
Absolutely.
That's always a good sign.
Key lime cake was my first.
Key lime cake is excellent. I need to make that again. It's been a while. And I think as I'm troubleshooting my new oven, that may be one that I dredge up again. I'm just curious, are your coworkers as voracious as mine? I mean, do they pretty much eat anything?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You could take foam packing peanuts. If you covered them in chocolate, people would eat them here.
And tell you how good they were.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And you'd fit right in here in the Midwest, Melissa.
I'm sure I would. I've been to the Midwest a lot. I love the Midwest. Yeah.
Well, anyway, what we're trying to do here today and over the next couple of days is to raise some money to pay for programs like Focus and like All Things Considered, as a matter of fact. And in order to do that, we've got some assistance from a couple in Champaign who are challenging us. And Heather, tell us about that.
Well, we have a couple here from Champaign who are huge fans of WILL, both AM and FM, and they have laid down a challenge for us today to get 15 calls during the two-hour focus period here, and they will give to us an additional $1,000 toward our pledge total. That's significant today because we need to raise $35,000 in support of public radio here at WILL. So we're hoping to get off to a great start with your call right now, 217-244-9455.
The money that pays for the programming comes from a variety of sources, but we want to shine the spotlight on what really we think is the most important source, and that's listeners. And the fact of the matter is 40% of the money that it takes to run the station comes from listeners. And if you ask the question, where among our various funding sources, where's the potential for growth? That's really the only place. And that is the base on which everything we do is built. Without our listeners and their contributions, we simply could not do what we do. They're the ones that help keep the lights on and keep the transmitter going, make it possible for us to have programs like All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Fresh Air, This American Life, Car Talk, everything else that people expect will be there when they go and they turn on that radio. Well, the reason it's there is that the people who use the service also support it. They're not just moral supporters. They don't just say, hey, you guys do a great job. Well, they understand that they are the main energy source for what we do. Without that kind of financial support, we simply couldn't do it. So what we're just saying to people is, well, you use the service, it's important, just pay a little bit of the cost. Think of it the same way that you think about your subscription to your newspaper or your cable, or maybe you get a news magazine or whatever it is. A little bit every day, you know, goes into the jar, and then that money goes and it helps pay for the programming. And it's really easy. You don't want to make it sound like it's too complicated. You just make, you know, call 217-244-9455. You can go online. It's very easy.
And one more quick mention, and then we'll get back to cake. We would like to say thank you for a pledge of financial support. And one way we can do that is by sending out All Cakes Considered.
Yes, we can. For just a mere $52 pledge, that's just a dollar a week to support the programs you look forward to and enjoy, we will send you, as our way of saying thanks, the All Cakes Considered Cookbook. You're hearing about it today. I can personally vouch for what a wonderful cookbook and an entertaining read as well. So go to the phone now, 217-244-9455. Or if you're listening online, go to willpledge.org and make a $52 gift and say, send me that cookbook.
Okay. And now on the phone with us, we have a very special person, another wonderful cook. Her name is Dori Greenspan, and we've asked her to join us for a couple of minutes this morning because, one, we enjoy her company. Two, she's a wonderful cook and cookbook author. Her latest is just out, Around My French Table. And three, Melissa has included a couple of Dori's recipes in All Cakes Considered. And Dori has also helped Melissa out from time to time as she's embarked on her baking adventure. So Melissa, Dori, say hello to one another.
Dori!
I wish I could be there with all of you. What a great group. And to talk about cake, is there anything better?
I don't think there is. How are you doing?
Well, I'm on book tour, so where am I? I think I'm in Houston today.
That's a good place to be.
It's really been fun. It's so great to meet readers and to meet people who whose blogs I know. You know, somebody came up to me and introduced themselves and said, oh, you're Whisk and Spoon. really great fun to be on the road.
Well, since you're on the road, maybe you would tell us about Swedish visiting cake. What's the story behind that cake?
This is such a great cake. I have a house in Connecticut, and I shop for vegetables at a place called Bishop's Orchard. And I always have the same cashier. And we were talking, and she said she was renovating her house, and she was looking for a sink. And I said, well, come see my sink. I love it. And she came to my house, and she brought the Swedish visiting cake, and it was love at first, just even looking at it. It's such a simple cake, and she told me that her mother, who actually lives in Sweden, would make this cake, and she would say that it was so easy to make that when you saw people come up the road, you could start making the cake, and it would be ready by the time they sat down for coffee. And it's a very simple butter cake. It has no leavening. When it was given to me, it was been made in a skillet. And it's just one of these cakes that looks incredibly, well, it is. It's very plain. And then you take a bite and you think, this is really good. And you take another bite and it's just, it's a nibble cake. It's just
sublime.
A nibble cake.
It's where it's the almonds in it. I really, to me, make the cake.
The almonds that are sprinkled over the top of the cake.
Oh, yeah.
And a little bit of sugar that's sprinkled on top of the cake so it glistens.
That too.
Yeah, but it's really a very plain cake, and it's become a real favorite of mine. And it's one that I serve plain, but you can dress it up. You can put berries on it. You can serve it with jam. You could use lemon curd with it. A little Nutella isn't bad. You can really just play with this cake.
Yeah, and Melissa, if your two cats had to say this and Dory's rum-drenched vanilla cakes would be their favorites because they're so easy. The mixer remains unplugged.
The mixer
exactly.
is quiet, and therefore the cats are happy.
Yeah. Yeah, both of those cakes. Actually, I use the vanilla cake when I'm teaching people who've never baked before because you'll always be successful with that cake. And so it feels so good. And it also feels so good to make something by hand, really using your hands and not a machine.
Yeah. It really does. I love those recipes that are simple and quick, that you don't have to drag the mixer out and clean the mixer afterwards. I mean, as much as I adore my mixer, it is fun just to kind of sit there one day and just go, I've got about 20 minutes. What can I do? And then, you know, to grab one of Dory's recipes that are like this, it's just like, okay, it's fun. It's fun. It's hanging out with a buddy.
You know, but listen, you're right when you say just 20 minutes. I think, some people think baking is complicated. I feel like a baking evangelist. I want everybody in the kitchen baking. But the fact is that the cakes really come together rather quickly. The long part is the baking and the waiting for them to cool. The actual putting together is often a very, very short time.
And what's the learning curve?
Well, Melissa?
I think 10 cakes.
10 cakes.
I think 10 cakes. Honestly, I do because, I mean, Dory, you and I have talked about this a lot, but, you know, how I was trying to learn how to bake and how frustrated I was getting because I was going to, for all these recipes that were just a little too advanced for me. But then when I got your book and found some recipes that were a little bit more scaled down, as soon as I started, it was like I learned so much from the first recipe to the second to the third, and by the time I got to 10, I felt like I could tackle those more advanced recipes
and
because I had a better concept, and I did.
And
I had a
did.
Better concept of how it all comes together. And once you have that concept, I mean, you can just take off. You can try anything.
Yeah. Dory, what was your learning curve? Because now you've got these two wonderful baking books, Baking from My Home to Yours and Baking with Julia.
Yes.
Tell us about your learning curve. How did you begin?
Well, it's really, Celeste, that's such an interesting question, and I haven't thought about that in years because I did start years ago. I started as a newlywed who'd never cooked or baked anything and just wanted to. And so I cooked and baked from books. Actually, I baked from the New York Times cookbook, which is not exactly a detailed, the original one, not exactly a detailed cookbook. And, you know, I can't even remember how it went. What I do remember is that when I started baking from Maida Heater's Great Dessert Cookbook, everything changed. Because the recipes were so clear and they were so detailed and it was so easy to follow them, that was really, that book was my baking epiphany.
Mm. Melissa, what was your introduction to Dory?
A book arrived in Michelle Norris's inbox one day, this gorgeous book. And Michelle did not bake. She's not a baker. She's a fantastic cook. And I was struggling, you know, working with the cake project. And I just kind of, I was starting to wind down a little bit. And I think I'd done it for 6 months. And she goes, here, take a look at this and see what you think. And I flipped through it. I fell in love with this book. I thought, oh, we have to do this book. And I told Michelle, we have to do this book. And she said, well, why don't you call the author and talk to her? So I called Dory, and it's like as soon as we started talking, it was an instant connection. Like,
oh,
we've known
I remember
each other
that
for
phone
years.
Call so well.
I forgot where you were. I called you on your cell phone.
Yeah, where I didn't hear so well on that. But
right. And after I got off the phone with Dory, I went back to Michelle and went, we have got to get her on this program. And we have had her on every fall since. I mean, we've got two more recipes coming up in just a few more weeks. We're going to have Dory on the show.
I can remember sitting in the parking lot of the Urbana Free Library listening to Dory and Michelle whip something up. I thought, I'm not leaving the car until
how wonderful.
Until this feature is over.
It's one of my
really
all-time favorite
wonderful.
Things.
Wait, I'm sorry, Melissa, you go.
No, that's okay. I was just saying it's one of my all-time favorite things to do on my job every year is to get those two together and see what they come up with. It is just so much fun to be in the kitchen with them. And I hope, I know that some of it comes through. I hope that the listeners enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing
it. Oh, we have such a good time. And do you remember that when I first came to the studio, Michelle had just gotten her stand mixer?
Yes, because she was going to actually try to learn how to bake.
That's right.
And she got a rocket red KitchenAid.
We've put that to good use, and so has she.
Mm. We really have, and she's really done well with her baking. I have to give her credit for that, because as somebody who didn't bake very often, she tries things now, and she didn't try them before. So,
yeah.
You converted someone else, Dory. Congratulations. Your mission is almost complete.
Listeners, join us this morning. Join the conversation here on Focus with a phone call or by email. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Dory, I don't know how much time you can spend with us this morning. You're welcome to stay, but I know you're on tour.
Thank you. I have a plane to catch.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh.
Next stop, San Antonio.
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
So,
this has been such great fun. We should get together more often. I like this, but we should all have... Do you have coffee and cake with you now?
I have tea with me, and I had a scone before I came in.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm nibbling a cookie.
Okay.
And coffee. But we should get together.
Yeah. Well, as soon as we get out of the studio this morning, we're headed for cake.
Good.
Okay. Well, take care. And we'll be talking to you, I think, in the not-so-distant future about Around My French Table.
I know, and I'm so looking forward
okay.
to it. Thank you. Bye,
okay.
Melissa.
Bye, Dory.
Bye, Celeste.
Bye, Dory. Dory Bye. Greenspan. That was lovely that she could join us this morning.
I love her so much.
Yeah.
She is such a sweetheart.
And now you have to tell us the story about how she came to your rescue in the wake of... some difficulties with buttercream frosting.
Oh, gosh. Buttercream frosting is such a conundrum. And it's funny because we're doing another segment on All Things Considered, several segments called Kitchen Quandaries. And you might have heard it last week, earlier this week, Shirley Carrier, who is a food chemist out of Atlanta. She's also kind of the go-to person for chefs who are having problems with recipes. And so we've asked listeners to write us in with their kitchen quandaries going into the holiday season. And we're having Shirley come back and talk about, you know, solutions. And lo and behold, you know, I've got like I narrowed it down to 20 good questions. One of them is on buttercream. And I had a feeling it was going to be on buttercream. Buttercream is one of those icings that are just so delicious, especially if you love butter.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be really frustrating to put together. And this was the problem that I had. And the listener who wrote in seems to have the same problem. I had a recipe for buttercream that I was trying that didn't seem to be that difficult. And it was onerous. It was time consuming. And when I finished with the buttercream, it looked okay, but when I got it on the cake, it kind of curdled, and there were little pools of fat. and I couldn't get it to stick on the cake. And I put the cake in the refrigerator and then tried it again and re-whipped it. And then I went ahead and remixed the buttercream from scratch to see if I had done something wrong, if I'd been abducted by aliens or blacked out the last time I had done the buttercream. Because you never know. Sometimes you just miss a step. A phone call happens. Same thing. I could not figure out what I was doing wrong. And I was so frustrated that it made me want to violate one of my tenets of the cake project, which was not to go to the store and use any store-bought ingredients like store-bought icing. But I was just that desperate for buttercream that I was going to go out and get some Duncan Hines buttercream. Because Dory and I happened to have, we happened to be coordinating on a baking segment. And so I gave her a call, and she said, oh, no, you're trying one type of buttercream, and there really is an easier way. And so she pointed me to this recipe in baking. And anybody who has baking is pretty thick, and it takes a while to get through all the recipes. And I hadn't gotten to this point yet, so she's like, skip ahead. So I skipped ahead and found her recipe for buttercream, which was really quite easy, and I tried it. And it worked out beautifully. And then the second time I did it, I thought, this is the experimenting coming in. What would this taste like if I added just a little bit of honey? And I ended up creating this, you know, adding just this little thing to Dory's recipe and making this different type of buttercream that has a honey flavor to it, clover honey. But yeah, Dory's great because anytime I have a question, and it's just something, and I can't reach my mom, or my mom doesn't know the answer, just email Dory real quick, and then she'll email me right back, or I'll give her a call if it's something I'm really having a problem with, and we need to chat with it. But, oh, God, she's great. Everybody needs a Dory Greenspan in their life.
Yeah. You know, the first time you talk with her, she's like, instantly, there's just a rapport. She's so easy to talk with, like you. And so thanks for joining us again this morning on Focus. By the way, this honey buttercream and apricot jam cake is something to aspire to.
It's a good cake. It's a very light cake. Yeah. To me, it's a spring cake because, you know, when we think about foods around the seasons, you know, fall right now, my thoughts are all about apples and sweet potatoes and cinnamon and spices and, you know, prunes and plums and dried fruits and nuts. But then when I get into spring, my thoughts turn more to like angel food cake, light cakes, cakes that, you know, are fragrant and remind you of everything that's sort of blossoming and coming to life. And this cake to me is like the perfect spring cake. If you wanted to have a party or you had a birthday coming up and you didn't want to eat anything really heavy and you wanted something light, to me, this is like the perfect thing to do. And it's so easy. I mean, Dory's buttercream recipe is super simple. The recipe for the whipped cream cake is also easy. And then the thing that really makes this cake, which is just a technical thing, all you do is, you know, as you're putting the icing on between layers, you just layer on your favorite apricot jam. And you can use a different type of jam, too, if you want, if you've got a different flavor in mind. But again, simple, fun, beautiful, tasty. I mean, you know, makes you very popular, I'll tell you that. I have to beat people off my door with a stick.
Yeah, you're known as the cake. In fact, you're known as the cake lady.
Yeah, everybody, when they see me, haven't seen me in a while, it's like, oh, what'd you bring in this week? Everybody's always curious. And then they're like, I didn't get the email. What was it this week?
Melissa Gray is our guest this morning here on Focus. She's a producer of All Things Considered. She's also the author of All Cakes Considered, a year's worth of weekly recipes tested, tasted, and approved by the staff of NPR's All Things Considered. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with stories, questions about cake. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Paris, Illinois, on line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I love your program, and I've enjoyed baking for years. And one of the cakes that I've made through time is an Italian cream cake. And
describe this cake.
It's a great cake. 6 layers and coconut and cream cheese and all the goodies, and it's a wonderful cake. But once in a while in the past, I haven't made it for a long time, but sometimes I get a strong taste from the soda in it because the soda is leavening in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what causes that, because I measure it and I even sift it, you know, make sure I ain't got any lumps and everything like that. But sometimes I've had that happen, and when I've instructed kids, I've tasted cookies they've made, and that's happened. And
one
I
thing
just
about
wondered, what does that?
One thing about soda, and Shirley Carrier was talking about this with us a couple weeks ago, the thing about soda, it's very absorbent. That's why you use it in, you know, refrigerators to get rid of odors, and sometimes it will pick up smells that otherwise it wouldn't pick up. So the first question is the soda you're using completely new, or is it something that you opened and you periodically go back and forth to?
Yeah, and sometimes when it's on sale, you know, I'll pick up two or three boxes because I use it in my refrigerator or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it can get old.
It can get old, and it can get old kind of, you know, surprisingly fast. It's always good to start with fresh ingredients. If you bake a lot, you're not going to have soda hanging around too often. You're going to go through it pretty quickly. But if you're just baking occasionally, it's always good to, you know, just buy the small things of soda so that you know that it's new, you know that it's fresh, and that you're not going to pick up that taste. Now, in addition to that, soda also does tend to, you know, if there's not something, I think, to counterbalance it in the cake, sometimes it will get that sort of soapy taste to it. And again, really, I think the only remedy is just to make sure you're using new soda.
What about spices? What's a shelf life on a spice?
Well, the spices can go for years, and it really depends on the conditions that they're being kept in. Always cool, dry, and dark. That's the thing for archivists. They like to keep papers cool, dry, and dark. You want to do that with your spices, too. Now, of course, most people keep their spices in the kitchen. Where, you know, mine happen to be right next to my oven, my stove, so I tend to always test them before I'm going to do something. They will last. I think I read one place that some of the spices will last up to 2 to 3 years. They don't necessarily go bad, but they lose their potency. And you can always test them yourself right before you're getting ready to put something in a cake by just putting a little bit on your finger and tasting and seeing if it's still potent, see if it's still got that little bit of kick to it. Again, if I'm making something brand new, a new recipe I'm trying out, or it's something that I really, you know, the pressure's on, I'll go out and make sure that I have new spices. But again, if you bake a lot, you may go through your spices pretty quickly. I go through cinnamon like crazy. Mm. Like some people go through eggs.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Well, sure enough. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for the call this morning. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, the toll-free number. This is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. And today and for the next couple of days, we are in our fall membership drive. So I'm going to give you a different phone number now. That phone number is 217-244-9455. We hope you will pick up the phone and give us a call to that number and make a pledge of financial support to this listener-supported public radio station. My name is Celeste Quinn, and with me in the studio this morning, Heather Miller, the manager of member projects here at WILL, and David Inge, also a host of Focus. So we've got a challenge going. We have a beautiful thank you gift for folks who call in or go online to willpledge.org and make a contribution.
Yeah, we're hoping that just today we can hit a goal of we can raise $35,000 on
right.
our way to the major goal that we have. And we set these goals along through the year to try to keep us ourselves on track, because we're now raising the money that we'll pay for next year's programs, and we've just kind of gotten started here on our major fundraising effort for the year. So that's why we'd like to just hear from as many people as we possibly can. And as Celeste said, we have a challenge from a local couple that are big fans and supporters of ours, and we really appreciate that. And they've said that they will give us...
That's right, David, $1,000 for 15 calls before noon today. So we are off to a good start with 5 calls already in support of call-in talk shows like Focus 580, and we encourage you to take a moment right now and call 217-244-9455. Join us with your pledge call of support. Melissa mentioned something about seasonal baking and the right time of year, and I waited until 2 weeks ago to make the sweet potato pound cake because it sounded like a fall cake to me. Well, this is our fall pledge drive, our season of asking for you to support programs just like Focus 580. So please take a moment right now. If you're on your computer, an online pledge of $52 is very welcome right now at willpledge.org. And for that $52, we'd be happy to send you this beautiful cookbook. It not only has great recipes, but it is gorgeously laid out. Is that a word? Should I have said
yes,
that?
That's yes, right.
Gorgeously
fine.
Laid out. The pictures are beautiful. The stories that go with it are wonderful, including one story that she wrote about the triple chocolate orange passion cake that she made for a former colleague of WILL's, Jeremy Hobson.
Oh, my gosh. You guys know Jeremy?
Oh, yes.
He grew up here. He's one of our family.
He's been doing public radio since he was a boy, literally.
12.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much fun. I hear him on Marketplace. Yep. Now, Jeremy used to sit catty corner to me in the cubicles. And the funny thing is, whenever he would want to talk to me, rather than just say, sit up straight in his chair and talk to me, he would call me on the phone. And he was always, you know, bugging me to try different flavors and different recipes when I first started the cake project. And he was getting ready to leave NPR. He had just taken a job at Marketplace. And, you know, we hated to see him go. But it's always good for, you know, young people to go out and spread their wings and try new things. And so he was like, you know, I really want you to do this cake for me. I want the taste of chocolate and orange. Mm. Which is not a flavor that I normally would have combined. I was quite suspicious of it. I was like, Jeremy, I don't know. It's just not appealing to me. And he's basically begging me. He's like, I'm going to be leaving. I'll never get a cake again. You know? So he wore me down. And I looked up. I had this book called, it was Linda Eckhart, I think is her name. And it's like cakes in half the time, and she's a supporter of high-speed baking. Basically, it's high-temperature baking, and if you bake it at a higher temperature with thinner pans, you can get your cake quicker in your stomach, basically, is the theme. And she's got a lot of really interesting recipes, but this one came from that, and I tried it. Of course, I didn't have all the thin equipment. I had my regular thick pans, and so I had to adjust the recipe. But it turned out beautifully and very tasty, and I have to give Jeremy kudos for pushing me to do it. And sometimes you just need people to, you know, twist your arm and get you to do things, and that was one of those situations.
You know, on the one hand, I imagine you had a wonderful time writing the stories that accompany the recipes. On the other hand, I know that's a lot of work. Putting a book like this together is a good bit of work. Was there any cursing involved, Melissa Gray?
There was cursing involved in the actual recipes themselves because I had a whole list. You know, since this was not a book of completely original recipes, these recipes all have origins somewhere else. And many of the recipes have been just so transformed. I re-caked them and baked them and changed things so much that they're not as close to the original recipe as they would have. But you can't really claim it's the same recipe because it's changed so much. But because I was compiling recipes and trying recipes, things sometimes wouldn't go right. And what I've discovered, and this is a lesson for anybody out there who's trying to cook or bake, there are a lot of recipes out there that are not well written, that are not clear, that are not descriptive, and that have mistakes in them. And so you'll do it and think, it's me. But sometimes it's not. It's the recipe itself, which is why redoing it often is the test. It's sort of like, well, is it me? Is it the recipe? And if it's the recipe, then what can I do? This is the creativity. What can I do to make it work? So, yeah, there were some cursing involved. I think the Heaven and Hell cake, when I was trying to learn how to do angel food. Yeah. My husband loves to tell the story because at one point I did rival the Navy in my use of foul words. He could hear it from the basement, and he started to come up the stairs because he thought something was really, really wrong. And I was like, don't come up the stairs. I have had a problem with the angel food cake. I have to make it again. This is the third time. He just turned right around and went back down and watched football for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. And cursing, you know, sometimes it's good to get it out.
Get it out.
Especially if there are no children around or the cats have heard it. They're used to it. They don't, you know, repeat it, so.
Mm. Oof.
I can do angel food cake blindfolded now. But again, it's, you know, when you're learning things, you just have to be willing to make mistakes and know that it's part of the process. I'm much more laid back about making mistakes now. Things don't have to be perfect because I can get them perfect the second time.
Well, there's we've mentioned seasonal ingredients just a bit. And there's an apple cake in here that is a riff on Paula Deen's cake. And I think you said this is so easy a drunken monkey could do it.
Oh, it's not a riff. It's her recipe.
It's her recipe. Okay.
Straight up, her recipe. That was one of the three cakes I had before I started the cake project that I could always get to turn out. And yeah, it's so easy a drunken monkey can do it. I refer to this as sort of a dump cake because with most cakes, the butter cakes, there are certain steps that you have to do in certain order. You know, you have to cream your butter. That has to be done first. You sift your dry ingredients. You add your dry ingredients with the wet ingredients, and you put your flavorings in. And that's the typical way of mixing up a cake. With this recipe, you just put it all in the mixer and turn on the mixer. And, you know, that Dory and I mentioned, you know, 20-minute recipes. I mean, this is something you can whip up in 20 minutes. Well, let me take that back because it does take a little time to cut and core and peel the apples. But it's a very kind of sticky, gooey, syrupy, tasty apple cake. It has coconut in it. It's called Paula Deen's, I think it's Grand Girl's Fresh Apple Cake from Georgia. It's kind of crazy. Here it is. Paula Deen's Grand Girl's Fresh Apple Cake from Georgia. One of these really long, convoluted titles. And I cannot remember exactly where I got this recipe. I think I saw it on the Food Network when she was on. My husband used to watch Paula Deen when he first moved up from Georgia because he was homesick and wanted to watch somebody make, you know, good Southern cooking because I refuse to bake with, you know, or cook with too much fat. I don't do that home style Southern cooking that I grew up with and that he grew up because it's just not healthy. It's good. Just not healthy. You can't live on that stuff. So he would sit there and like watch it to make himself, you know, even more homesick. And she was doing this at the end of the program, and I thought, that's a pretty easy recipe. I'll try it. I tried it, and it's been a long-time favorite. In fact, the other day I was thinking, the next cake I try out in the new oven is either going to be Paula Deen's apple cake or it's going to be the other apple cake in the book, an ode to my grandmother and her fresh apple cakes that were always frozen.
Let's take a call now. A listener in Urbana is joining us this morning on Line 1. Hi.
Hi. You may already have covered this topic. I just tuned in. But is it a good idea to, if you're making a pound cake or something that requires butter and eggs, is it better that they sit out until they reach room temperature, the way my mother used to bake cakes, or can you just take them straight from the fridge cold and use them right away?
I would never use them cold. Never use them cold because the fats, when they're warmer, when they're room temperature, they're going to allow that sugar to dissolve a little bit better. It's also going to allow you to get more trapped air into the batter. And, of course, the trapped air in the batter is what makes the cake rise. And, you know, you can always shortcut trying to get them to room temperature. I have some tricks. I think I've talked about a couple of them in the book. You know, if I want to make a cake like within 30 minutes, I don't want to wait for it to get to room temperature because sometimes that can take an hour depending on, you know, what the temperature is. I'll take out the butter and I might sort of, you know, set it near the stove that's preheating so it softens up a little quicker. I'll also cut it into small pats because the small pats will warm up quicker on their own than if it's in one big block. And the other thing with the eggs, I always do this anyway because I usually don't like to leave your eggs out. Your butter you can leave out for several hours and not have to worry about, you know, nasty food things. Eggs should not be left out at room temperature for more than an hour. So to shortcut the eggs, I usually take the eggs out and put them in a warm bowl of water and let them sit for about 10 minutes. And that helps bring them to temperature. And that way, when all the ingredients are hitting, they're hitting at sort of room temperature and you're not getting the butter curdling or not really curdling, but, you know, clumping together because it's cold.
Do you recommend microwaving?
I don't. Okay. Not on butter, not on butter, because okay. What a microwave's going to do is it's going to actually melt the butter fat in certain areas. Because microwaves, they're great for other shortcuts, but they're so directional that you're going to end up getting like a cold section of the butter here and a melted section there.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm at my parking space, so thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Good question.
Thanks for the call this morning. And there we have to wrap it up. Melissa, it's just been a delight talking with you this morning. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and it's been always, always fun to talk about baking and cake.
Okay, Melissa Gray. She's a producer for All Things Considered. She's the author of All Cakes Considered, a year's worth of weekly recipes tested, tasted, and approved by the staff of NPR's All Things Considered. And we would love to send this book to you, listeners, as a thank you gift for your pledge of $52 or more. And you can make that pledge by giving us a call at 217-244-9455. 244-WILL or online at willpledge.org. And we're going to just mention very fast, very quickly here, the challenge. We want to hear from people this morning, the next hour the next few minutes and the next hour. We want to hear from some people because we've got a challenge going.
A real quick update, Celeste. We have a goal of 15 calls before noon today, and we are, I'm so pleased to say this, we're halfway there. We've
Excellent.
Got 7 calls in. You be the 8th right now, 217-244-9455. Help us raise that additional $1,000, get a terrific cookbook for yourself, and support the program that you tune in and listen to.
Okay, and there we wrap up our first hour of Focus on this Friday morning. Coming up, we'll have a market update and news from NPR in Washington. Stay tuned.